All righty, Monday, November 11th. Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show here on Damon Bruce Plus. And as if one Damon wasn't enough for you, we have two today. Damon, Amanda, Laura, your host of the DA Show on XM Sirius Satellite. It is good to see you, brother. It's been a long time. We had the cosmos bring us together with topics and our name, and it's a beautiful fit. I'm glad we can do this again. How are you, pal?
It's a beautiful thing, dude. I think about that trip so often, and I still sift through those pictures. They pop up on my phone. I keep talking about the A's ridiculousness. I keep remembering how fun that game was and that broadcast was and everything, and you're crushing it, man. So it is awesome, awesome to be here.
Well, thank you. It is good to have you. I'm telling you, I'm lucky. I got a great audience. They have migrated with me over here. My audience is always looking out for my back, and I have no more example of that than this right here. This is the postman in Capitola.
Yes.
And he was at the 49er game in Arizona. As you can see, he takes a Damon Bruce sticker everywhere he goes.
Nice.
And he slaps it on something. There's my logo just nice. Right there on that flagpole.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is what I believe we call guerrilla marketing. That's in exactly the business. It. And it works. So thanks so much to the postman for doing that. And again, Damon, it's so good to have you here. We are deep enough into this NFL season. And I know, look, you're based on the East Coast. I'm out here on the West Coast. And there's an awful lot of football that happens in the middle. So I thought we'd bring on two different coastal perspectives today to talk about this playoff picture that is officially coming into focus. You know, we're very Niner-centric here on the Plus. Great day for the 49ers against an awful Arizona team. I don't know if there's a single thing to learn from that game. Burn the tape, but it was good to see Brock coming on back. If you wouldn't mind, what do you think of the 49ers? Their injury-riddled season, their cobbled-together victories with Mac Jones playing fantastic backup quarterback, and now Brock being in the mix. I don't know if they got a defense that's ready to go punch with the best of them. But this is the most wide-open NFL I've ever seen, and I think if you're in the playoffs, you will, by definition, have a shot.
Well, this is a supremely well-coached team. It's an incredible compliment to the guys that built this roster and coached this team that they've been able to do what they've been able to do with this many injuries. There's a lot of other lesser organizations, a lot of other lesser coaching staffs that would have completely fallen apart and had every reason to with the basis of injuries. I mean, just simply a quarterback. When you lose your starting quarterback, you're almost in a spot where you are assumed to lose every game. And I mean, look at the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens lost Lamar Jackson and found themselves at 1-5. So they have, and that's a pretty good football team with a pretty good head coach. So it's no doubt an extraordinary ability to just stay in the mix that Mac and company have been able to do this without the injuries. Second part is, I think the NFC is a little bit less wide open than the AFC. The AFC is a series of flawed teams, 1-7. I think at the top of the NFC, you have the Eagles, you have the Rams, and I thought we had the Lions, but I don't think we do right now. But the Niners, based on getting Purdy back, I think the final month and a half could look different about how I feel about them at the top of the NFC. So this season is far from dead for San Francisco. And for the record, I keep winning money on that line because Vegas keeps underestimating the Niners and what they can do. And so I'm happy to collect.
Well, look, I got a Vegas-based question for you. And I feel like right about now would be a great time to integrate the fact that over here on Damon Bruce Plus, we are brought to you in part by Sleeper. And we want to thank everyone at Sleeper. You can use promo code Damon, get a $100 deposit match, up to $100 when you make that first deposit. We always want to say thanks to them. And it is the fastest growing fantasy app in the world. Great user interface. And thanks to Brian Robinson falling forward on that last play from scrimmage before they went to victory formation. I was able to cash a winning ticket yesterday. I had a yardage over and oh, that's a good feeling. It really is. We want to always thank our man Ike of Ike Sandwiches. Without Ike, we would not be up here every single day. Get yourself an Ike sandwich. Sign up for that Love Rewards program. You get a free sandwich when you sign up and so on and so forth. And the next time you're out here, I'm taking you to the Dubliner West Portal in San Francisco. This is the best Guinness pull you're going to get in the city of San Francisco. Kenny and John, great bartenders. It's a great bar. You got to like a bar with high school football helmets in it, right?
Oh, I love it. I love
local
it.
High school football helmets
of football and the essence of being a sports fan, getting down to the roots.
Absolutely. if I gave you $1,000, said you had to, you can't cut this up. You got to put a grand on a team to win the Super Bowl. Who are you going to the window with right now?
I guess the Eagles. I don't feel great about that. My preseason pick was Eagles, Bills in the Super Bowl. I'd have a tough time throwing a grand on the Bills, even though I could talk myself into it. The Eagles are finding ways to win despite not playing very good offense, and they have the talent to be a good offense. So I guess it would be the Eagles, although I don't think they're going to repeat, but if I had to throw a grand on one football team right now, it would be Philly.
What is going on with A.J. Brown? I don't get that. That seems like a guy that you would force feed him, not only because it's going to help you move the ball downfield, but you're going to want to shut him up here at some point. What's going on there? What's the disconnect?
So I had Diana Rossini from The Athletic on my YouTube show last night. For those that don't know, I do a Sunday night recap show of all things NFL and have a pretty significant NFL guest each and every week join me to kind of like in real time, what are you seeing? And Diana's one of the best. So if you got an audience right now that likes to talk about NFL and hear it from the horse's mouth, hit me up on the subscriber list and follow me because it's a good show.
Absolutely. If you're subscribing to one, Damon, subscribe to two.
That's right.
Go over and I know we're streaming on both channels today. Are we not?
That's right. We are crossing the streams, as they say.
And I'll tell you what, if you're a DA guy, hit a subscribe for me. If you're a DB guy, hit a subscribe for DA. DA, DB, I never even realized that. We're really close to each other.
That's right. So I asked Diana about this because she had an interesting anecdote in her piece in The Athletic. And her sources say A.J. Brown's not an island, that A.J. Brown is speaking for other members of that offense, that the Jalen Hurts thing has hurt critical mass, that Hurts is now overthinking a lot of the coverages he sees. He doesn't want to turn the football over. He's so turnover averse, especially when he sees zone coverage. He's basically tucking it in and running. And the wide receivers, not just A.J. Brown, are very frustrated that he's not getting anybody the football. And A.J. Brown is the guy that's vocalizing it. Now, that doesn't mean he's some type of hero. They all recognize that A.J. Brown should not be doing this. But when you hear A.J. say, I'm not apologizing for it, and Jeffrey Lurie is talking to him in practice and saying, you know, we're hashing it out and he knows he shouldn't say it, but I'm not reprimanding him. I think what it says is there's a bigger thing here than just A.J. Brown. And it feels like A.J. Brown needs to just shut up. But I thought this is super interesting and makes more sense that it's not just a guy going rogue that they can't control. It's a guy that feels like he is speaking for others in that locker room right now. And that is the biggest reason that you would look at the Eagles and go, they ain't repeating, because they might not have trust in their quarterback and it's really hard to win a Super Bowl if that doesn't happen.
Where do you stand on Sirianni? Really good at it? Kind of overrated? What do you think?
I think he stinks. I think he's an imbecile. And I get flack on this because the guy's been to two Super Bowls and he's won one and they're in first place. And I just said I would put $1,000 if I had to on him to win the Super Bowl again. But I just think this is a Barry Switzer situation in some regards. He's better than Switzer, but the 95 Cowboys won a Super Bowl in spite of their head coach. And I don't think he's as bad as Switzer. I mean, Switzer is kind of put in that position so that Jerry can prove anybody can coach that team. I don't think it's that bad. But I just think Nick Sirianni talks himself into problems and coaches himself into problems. And I honestly think that the roster's kind of Sirianni proof. Now, I will say, if there is a bubbling situation under the surface that we don't see, that this team doesn't trust Jalen Hurts or the wide receivers, and Hurts is an issue in pulling the trigger on the offense or the play calling, yada, yada, yada. If that's a thing, maybe Sirianni's just taking bullets. And maybe I should back off my criticism, but I just don't think, I mean, if you went through the coaches, I don't think he's a top 10 coach in the NFL. I think he's probably, and now there's a lot of bad coaches in the NFL, but maybe he's 14 or 15 in the NFL. So imbecile might be strong, but I just think that they would in spite of him.
If I just place the same grand on the same bet, I think I'm taking the Rams right now. I just think they're cooking and Stafford is having the type of year and they got.
I would have said that before yesterday, but what'd you think about yesterday against the Seahawks?
I mean, they're good. They're a good team. I mean, I'm very familiar with the Rams from, you know, the Niners playing them twice a year, and they're just the kind of team that I think is getting better as it goes along here. And they just, the Seahawks, first of all, The thing that really impressed me that Seahawks game, and I didn't watch much of it at all because I'm doing a watch party. I'm watching the Niners, obviously.
Right.
The way that Seattle circled the wagons around Darnold after a bad game speaks more to how much he is their quarterback than any good game I think he's had. I mean, they really believe in this guy. They went to defend their boy after a bad afternoon of football and said, it's not all on him. I was surprised by that, but I just think that between Kyren Williams, Puka Nacua, you got problems defending every blade of grass, and the Rams defense is a problem causer. It really is. In a world where it's wide open, I'll take the red hot quarterback who just doesn't make mistakes. And that seems to be Stafford right now. He is really throwing down an MVP campaign.
I really like the Rams as well. And I think I could have given you a different bet or a different answer 3 or 4 days ago. And the reason I say that is the Eagles won a football game last night against one of the best teams, I think, in the NFC. And the offense barely did anything because the defense is so ferocious. And I have to think that the Eagles offense gets better than where it is right now. The Rams defense is also equally ferocious. And you love Puka. I mean, he just does everything. But they needed 4 interceptions from Sam Darnold and a coffin corner punt for the ages to win by 2 points on a long missed field goal against the Seahawks. Now, it's possible the Seahawks are a really good football team. I think they're good. I don't know if they're great. I just thought if you get 4 picks, it should not be that close. And look, that was a 61-yard field goal that they attempted that fell short, and it was because of a coffin corner punt. So I needed to see a little bit more separation between the Rams and the Seahawks to make me feel like the Rams are really that team.
I don't think there's greatness out there. I agree. A very good team is going to win the Super Bowl.
It won't be
a great team that wins it. I think the Rams are chief among the very good teams and seem to be less injury prone. And while you question the Eagles coaching, and I think Dan Campbell's kind of getting raked over the coals for taking over the offense or at least bragging about it and then falling flat, McVay's really good. McVay is very, very good. And I just think that they got the right brain trust. No 49er fan wants to hear, look out for the Rams in the Super Bowl, but look out for the Rams in the Super Bowl. I think it's really, really out there. Again, the playoff picture coming in and out of focus, and I think you're totally right. The NFC might be a little bit more top-heavy than the AFC. I don't know what the Bears are still. I think the Buccaneers on any given day can walk into your stadium and beat you. I know they didn't this weekend, but I think the Buccaneers are pretty damn good. I don't know about the Packers. I don't know about the Green Bay Packers. They seem to have a really yo-yo relationship with Jordan Love. They love him 1 week, hate him the next.
Flawed team. It's too bad. Packers have a lot of the pieces that you want if you're looking for a great team, if you're looking for a team on the come, if you're looking for a team that should be hitting its stride. The trade for Micah Parsons was an all-in type of trade. I love Josh Jacobs, although now injured. They have a really good defense, and they have experience in the playoffs. They have a young quarterback that should be ascending. The problem is the passing game, and I don't know if it's a LaFleur problem. I don't know if it's a Jordan Love problem. I don't know if it's a lack of weapons problem. You know, the Tucker Kraft injury is a massive one. Before Tucker Kraft went down, it was an offense that could really move the football with chunk plays and could grind out yards with Josh Jacobs. Kraft went down, and they just can't do it anymore, and they just have – I don't think it's the wide receivers are a problem. It's just not there. So it's the Bears are not great. No. And the Lions, these two games on Sunday Night Football against the Chiefs and the Eagles were both black eyes for the Lions, and the Packers are not where they should be. So yeah, the NFC North is just, it's not nearly what it was last year. And I think your point on the Rams coaching staff is very important here. If you're looking at the best head coach on a very good team, it might be the Rams. So if that's what we're talking about, this kind of king of a mountain and everyone's kind of at a certain level and you're just looking at the coach, yeah, I mean, it could be the Rams. It absolutely could be the Rams this year.
By the way, Rita just wants to throw out with a super. My Niners, 89 Super Bowl. She's betting on the 89 Niners, I guess, to win the Super Bowl.
So, it's a great team. Yeah, if you had to go to war with any team, the 89 Niners is a good one to do it with.
Ben Diesel says Sirianni gets carried by his coordinator. So I think he's in full agreement with you. And
true.
I mean, I don't know if you're getting carried by your coordinators or a defensive line that is just fantastic. That offensive line isn't quite what it used to be. Still pretty good. Again, I like Philadelphia. I don't love them. I like the Rams. I don't love anybody this year. I really do not love anybody, and I really just don't get what the hell's going on in the AFC. I feel like the Indianapolis Colts and maybe the New England Patriots at some point here are going to have a sprint back to reality. I do like Drake May. How is Daniel Jones's success being processed on the East Coast? Are they working through it as Giants fans? Maybe Jackson Dart makes you feel a little bit better about this situation, but Daniel Jones figuring it out in Indianapolis, what are they saying in New York?
Look, I wonder if that's part of the reason Brian Daboll got fired. The moment Daniel Jones left, he turned into the quarterback for potentially the number one seed of the AFC and comeback player of the year. I know there was a year in between, but I mean, understandably, there are Giants fans going, well, what the heck? He was a bum here, and now suddenly Daniel Jones is a great quarterback. I think that the Colts gave him a much better offensive line than he ever had, and the Colts gave him clearly a more balanced team than he had. But if this is just coaching, it's a real black eye on Brian Daboll. It's a real black eye because Daniel Jones never looked like this, and it's not like they didn't have Jonathan Taylor. They had Saquon Barkley in his prime. So this is a real comeuppance for the Giants. You're right. It eases things because of Jackson Dart. But I think that there's some major concerns just about how this team has been built. You seem to have a lot of good young talent, Malik Nabers, Abdul Carter, Jackson Dart. They found Cam Scadaboo in the third round. They brought in Brian Burns. They have Dexter Lawrence. They have Kayvon Thibodeau. And they're still one of the worst teams in football. So it's like, what's got to give there? And, you know, the Giants won a Super Bowl the last time any team did in this town. But it's now going on 15 years, and it's been 15 years of bad football. So the Giants have been caught in this spiral for a long time. And they got to hit on this next head coach, or else it's just going to continue to spiral. And it's hard to have missed as badly as they did in the last four head coaches. Daboll, Joe Judge, Ben McAdoo, Pat Shurmur. That's a bad decade and a half. It's a bad decade and a half around the Giants.
I forgot about Shurmur entirely.
They hired a guy that was fired by the Browns. Can you believe taking a guy that was fired by the Browns?
Probably not the right idea. Speaking of the Browns, you know, that's a scary defensive line. There's no doubt about it. Last time the 49ers went to Cleveland, they dealt with a tough Browns team and bad weather and played poorly and got their asses kicked. As we're looking, you know, what path the 49ers need to get to 11, 12 wins, if that's what it's going to take to get them in, Shedeur Sanders may be starting in Cleveland a couple weeks from now when the Niners get there is something I think everybody had to start looking at. I think that first of all, it drives me nuts the way that this kid gets covered. It's embarrassing the way the media goes after him. And then to see him struggle and then everyone just play the, oh, I told you it was going to happen game, when actually, no, what you've been telling me is that he's the best option and Dylan Gabriel and you know, it's all been a waste of time and just get to Shedeur, get to, like, the media can't even remember where it started its talking point on Shedeur Sanders. And then he goes out and he stinks in his debut. Sometimes I hate the media. I really do. And not you, not me, but there's people out there who are just talking out of both sides of their mouth to serve the moment. And it drives me nuts.
The Shedeur story has been perhaps the single worst story from an NFL media standpoint in a long, long time, for a lot of the reasons that you just mentioned. It began before he was drafted with everybody picking sides. This is before. This is coming out of Colorado and where he should be drafted, and should he be number one? Should he be number two? Is he not a franchise quarterback at all? Is it because of his dad? What have you? And once he started slipping in the draft in April, those that had defended him could take the side of politics, unfair, nobody knows what they're talking about, and they had Mel Kiper Jr. to kind of like, you know, rah, 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 that take. So that was their validation. Those that watched him drop said, see, entitled, it was daddy, immature, all that stuff. And so they, you know, they had the din of the crowd behind them too, so they could rah-rah there. And then he had never played a snap of football. So everybody had retreated to their corners and nobody knew the truth yet. And so now we have, as you just said, this drumbeat of the last 12 weeks longer because it went into training camp in the preseason and rookie camp. And then we finally get him on the football field and it's kind of a dud. And there might be a lot of guys that were kind of duds in their first start, thrown in the middle of a game for a bad football team. But there's also some decent evidence that he certainly isn't so much wildly better than Joe Flacco or Dylan Gabriel or whatever that he had to start. So it's just a reminder that, like, when you have the hottest of takes before you've seen a guy even get drafted, it's usually the stupidest thing possible. But it's going to be like this for the rest of his career, which is really unfortunate, because what do we ever do that with anybody that, like, before he gets drafted, we've all decided whether we love or hate the kid? It's, to your point, like the worst covered story ever.
It's kind of nuts how you can't even really get behind a definitive, I think I know what I'm looking at, after a full year of football. I mean, look at the sophomore slump that CJ Stroud found himself in last year, really hasn't pulled himself out of it all the way this year. It is progress is not linear. And I just think there are too many people playing Madden on rookie that think this is going to be easy when the rubber hits the road in the real NFL. There's nothing easy out there. And there is no harder position in the world than professional quarterback in this league. And at no time are there more than 12 dudes who are actually playing it well. So it's really, really hard out there, and trying to speak a player into existence again before he's had a practice is a little nuts. At what point does Mel Kiper's credibility just get hung on that hook? And we say, Mel, it might be time for you to stop the draft coverage. I mean, that's how embarrassing that was.
It was the lowest point of his career and one of the lowest points of any draft Knicks career, because it's one thing, I thought, to really have a strong opinion that, hey, this guy's really good, this guy's getting overlooked, and, you know, he's going to end up being validated. That's a fine take, and nobody would argue with that type of take. It's when you scream and yell and have a tantrum every time he's not drafted that it must be politics, that it must be a conspiracy, that the forces are working against him. And for a guy in that platform to not have understood or had heard or just decided to ignore that behind the scenes, what we all didn't know as the public was that he had ignored phone calls or tanked interviews, or which he admitted, his camp admitted afterwards that, yeah, we probably played that wrong. He should have been better about that. He ignored that or didn't have the source that other guys did in his spot and just acted like this was a grand conspiracy theory. And that does not serve the viewer at all. And I just thought that this is really unprofessional. And I said it at the time, and I have a video about this that I taped right after the show or right after the draft, saying, even if you're right that he dropped unnecessarily and will be good, to spend 3 days pointing the finger and saying every GM is an idiot, right, every GM is an idiot, is beyond the pale, because you don't know as well as they don't know yet. And what we found out later was every GM had a lot of good reasons to say, that's not what I need on my team. He's not ready for that responsibility yet.
You know, it's hard to admit when you're wrong. I'd like to think I'm better at it than most. And I'll tell you, let's play a little truth serum here. Which Damon was more wrong? What was the take that you were going with at the beginning of this year that at this point in the year, you absolutely got that wrong? Mine is a blinking neon red light. I actually thought that Pete Carroll was going to stabilize the Raiders. I didn't think the Raiders were going to have a winning season or be a playoff team, but I thought they were going to go from stepping on their own dicks every other play to actually looking like a football team with some competency behind it. And Geno might help him out a little bit. And I couldn't have been more wrong. I mean, I know you don't want to go firing a guy with like Pete's, you know, a reputation because it's embarrassing for, but at the same time, if that guy isn't an instant culture change, you got to go. Cause there's not a lot of future there with Pete Carroll. It's not like year four of Pete Carroll is going to be great. There will be no year four. Even if year one went great, that's how old he is. So I got that wrong. And the Raiders, when they probably get clocked by the Cowboys tonight, they should think about maybe moving on once again. You know, nine games into another year, and it's time for a new regime change.
I thought the same thing about Pete Carroll. I had said all offseason this was a really good hire, and they finally got the professional they needed at the top there. And you're right, it's been horrendously wrong for both of us. I have steadfastly said the Colts are one and done. I don't care what seed they have in the playoffs. I don't trust them at all. I don't trust the quarterback, and I just don't think this ends in a deep playoff run. We have yet to see whether that'll be right or will be wrong. But I am really, really, really painted in that corner. But I will also say
the Colts do have a four-game losing streak in them. We just haven't seen it yet.
I feel like they've got a one-game losing streak in the playoffs in them. So we'll see if that happens their wild card week and if they are not the one seed. I thought Sam Darnold was a true product of his scenario in Minnesota, and that he was going to be a wasted investment in Seattle. And that is not true. Now, you mentioned, you know, he went 0-4 yesterday, zero touchdowns, four interceptions, and the team rallied around him. And, you know, I will tell you that I think guys like him, I spoke to TJ Hockenson in the offseason at a charity benefit that I do. And, you know, he spoke glowingly about his relationship with Sam, and it was before Sam had left, but you could tell he didn't want to lose Sam Darnold because he was very close to him. But I just thought that everything in Minnesota was so perfect, you can't replicate that. And maybe you can't replicate it to a T, but Darnold's been really good. He has validated that contract despite what yesterday was. And Jackson Smith and Jigba has become one of the best wide receivers in football. And that's just a quarterback that clearly elevated the offense beyond Geno Smith. So I would say I was wrong. I did not think Sam Darnold was going to fit that well in Seattle.
By the way, we want to thank Rita once again, who's coming in with more supers. But so Rita is an old school Niner fan, and whenever there's an injury, she always references Ronnie Lott. Yes. Cut it off. So maybe after Eddie Pinheiro pulled his hamstring yesterday, the remedy is simply cut it off, get him back out there. And Rita wants everyone to know too. To remember Y.A. Tittle to R.C. Owens alley-oop. So, I mean, just Rita's got memories for everyone to solve this modern problems.
I love this. It's like watching NFL films, but like the story of the 49ers. This is good.
When in doubt, cut it off. amputation has become this team's MVP. It really has. Do you think, let's look at a few of the teams that are sort of on the outside looking in. Do you prescribe playoff participation to either the Ravens as they're trying to cobble together the right direction? Cincinnati thinks that maybe Joe Burrow is going to come back and save the day. I don't know if there's really anybody on the outside looking in the NFC that I think is going to crash the party. J.J. McCarthy isn't going to do enough for Minnesota there. And obviously, you know, Atlanta, that their season never even really started. Who in the rearview mirror might be the object that's getting closer, do you think?
It's the Ravens. The Ravens are on a four-game win streak. The Ravens now have Lamar and Derrick Henry. And even though it was a little too close for comfort yesterday against the Browns, it's a team that has now almost caught the Steelers in the division, which says a lot considering they were 1-5. And, you know, I think the Steelers were 5-2. And so now it's too close for comfort in Pittsburgh. And you have a broken bone, hypothetically, in the wrist, the non-throwing wrist of Aaron Rodgers. And the Steelers just are coming apart. And the Ravens are on a roll. And you can just see this car crash happening for the Steelers. I think the Ravens are going to track them down. I think the Ravens are going to take the division, and especially if Aaron Rodgers is out for a couple of weeks, it means Mason Rudolph is in. We've all seen that story unfold. So I think outside of looking in, I think it'd be the Ravens to crash the party, which is where a lot of people had the Ravens anyway before the season. I think in terms of I never thought that. I thought Ben Johnson would be an improvement in Chicago. I did not think they'd make the playoffs, and I certainly didn't think they'd win a division with the Packers and the Lions. Packers and Lions have both been disappointing. We got a lot of football left in that division. But to look at Thanksgiving a week and a half away and the Bears being on top of the NFC North, not something I ever figured.
Too much too soon. And I still am on my teeter-totters on Caleb Williams. I don't know yet. But
Same. But Ben Johnson getting more out of him than I ever thought they.
I do know he's a good coach. I can see that early on here. There's no doubt about that. He's got a little something to him. And for the first time, maybe it looks like the Lions are missing him a little bit. I think Dan Campbell's done a hell of a job cobbling together. And I lost my offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, and we're still one of the best teams in football. But yesterday, you know, he probably blew his shot at a Super Bowl by not taking points in San Francisco, well, Levi Stadium a few years ago. And I am on team. Fuck your field goals. Go for it on fourth down. I really am. I want aggressive coaching, but on a night, you got to play the game you're in. Like, there's a way we want to play tonight, but then you're in a game and you got to realize, like, we are scratching for points in this one. We're going to take the field goal. I saw somebody try to make the argument that Mike McDaniel passing up like a chippy field goal with a minute 45 to play over in Spain was the right move analytically. No, it wasn't. You kicked the field goal in that moment. Because I don't care. Analytics kind of go out the window when you're this deep into a game. Like, this is, there's not enough time for that to bear out anymore. Take your points here. Play some defense the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, your team bleat the field goal. I'm team take the points. And I think I was just reared on Bill Parcells' Giants teams of the 80s. And that just was like, you know, you're in field goal range, take the points and get out of Dodge. Now, I do agree with this. Every scenario is different. And you really can't use analytics to decide all this stuff. When I see coaches looking at a chart and saying like, oh, here is where you go for two. It's like, well, going for two in the first quarter is so much different than going for two in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes to play. It can't be on a chart. You cannot do that. Here's what I think about Dan Campbell's decision. I don't like it. I don't like that style of coaching. I don't like the idea that you can go 0 for 5 on fourth down and just keep ramming your head in the wall. And exactly as you said, it came back to bite him 2 years ago in the NFC Championship game. However, Dan Campbell's attitude is, you know, run through brick walls. And by virtue of that attitude, he built a loser into a winner. So it's hard for me to sit here and say, Dan Campbell, don't be yourself. Do something different. Because only because he was himself are the Lions actually contenders. But I tend to hate it. I think, you know, and I have a soft spot for the Lions. They are one of the longest suffering fan bases you'll ever see. It's a great sports town. And, you know, I love Barry Sanders. And so the idea that all those fans are just watching, like, finally a contender also keep dropping the ball is correct. Hard. And Dan Campbell is just such a cool guy. Like, you want to play for a guy like that. It makes me disappointed that he can't find a middle ground, that it's all gas, no brakes, every time, every day, all the time, even in play calling. But it is what it is, and he's not going to change. And so they have to figure out a way to win with that attitude. But I have a hard time going to bed going like, yeah, we went 0-for-5 and fourth down.
If you have one ass,
I can't do it.
Three toes, I will beat your ass.
I don't know what quote goes on the tombstone other than this.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes, I will beat your ass.
That's when I fell in love with Dan Campbell, and it's a love that still burns. It really is. I like him, but he needs to cool down on the meathead thinking just a little bit. I think you're right about that. Damon, one of the reasons why you are so good at what you do is you have, even though you are on the East Coast, you watch, you know, you watch sports everywhere, and you will get into someone else's topic as if it means something to you and you care an awful lot about fans, which is really what brought us together over the whole Oakland A's situation. And yeah, a couple of years ago, we came out, we did that broadcast together at Line 51. It meant so much to the Bay Area to see you and your national show give what is without a doubt a boutique topic the main stage that you gave them. And I think that the Bay Area loves you for that, and they should love you for that. And nobody nationally was on that story like the way you and your show was.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I really thank everybody in the Bay Area that's ever reached out to me, whether it's in the comments section of some of my videos on YouTube or on Twitter or on Instagram or however it is, calling up my radio show or whatever, emailing me. It's been amazingly overwhelming to hear just gratitude, just thanks for talking about it. And, you know, I'm not afraid to admit that I went in on something that my bosses were like, why are you talking about that? You know, you're supposed to be talking about big topics that matter to a lot of people. And you're talking about Oakland A's baseball. And I said, well, number one, this is important. It's important because if we believe all fan bases should be represented, they're having something terrible happen to them. And we should be covering that. But secondly, if it can happen to them, it can happen to a lot of other fan bases. And why don't we recognize that this is emblematic, this is symbolic of fans getting dragged when they didn't deserve to get dragged? And I naturally have a bit of BS meter when it comes to ownership, billionaire owners. I just tweeted out yesterday that we watched the stadium in Spain put grass turf underneath the stadium with hydroponic, you know, lights and heating systems and elevator systems to make sure that it's the best in the world. And I said, boy, Spain is running circles around us as we've got a $5 billion enterprise in LA that had to be funded by everybody, you know, but we have artificial turf with billionaire owners that just, they got to hoard a little bit more cash. So we have to have field turf in these beautiful palaces.
How can that stadium in Real Madrid not be league mandatory standard going on from here on out? You're building a new stadium. That's the turf you install, period. Unless you just, you know, you're outdoors and you got grass, in which case we're good. But if you're going to do a dome, you need that.
Absolutely. And Tottenham apparently does it as well. And so I naturally have this kind of like, okay, what are the owners trying to pull here? And once I started understanding the John Fisher thing, it was so overwhelmingly obvious that he was pulling a fast one at every corner that it was an authentic outrage that I had. And so it became alongside the pain of A's fans, I was outraged that an owner was doing this and getting away with it. And I was sad that a fan base had absolutely no recourse. And so I just feel really strongly about this. And I still talk about it to this day. And I still get bosses going, hey, well, we talk about more NFL stuff. Or are we sure we do? But I don't care. I think it's that important, because if it can happen in Oakland, where can't it happen? And I thought, you know, we were talking about some of the worst covered stories by the national media, and certainly Shador Sanders is in there. But I really thought the A's, when they were in Oakland trying to struggle for a stadium and to keep their team, was criminally reported and opined by the media, because we sat on the outside as the national media and we saw an empty ballpark that was falling apart and a bad team. And we said, well, they ought to move. And we didn't know anything else. We didn't know anything. We didn't know about John Fisher and what he was in investing. We didn't know about how he pulled the plan away, you know, at Howard Terminal. We didn't know that they had taken PR and basically told fans to go away. We didn't know about the last dive bar and about all of these things where it was, as I've said, orchestrated apathy. They wanted to make the ballpark empty to give them the camouflage to move. We didn't know.
It's the plot of Major League. It's the plot of Major League, for real. It really was.
And so the national media as a collective did such a disservice, because if you woke up and saw what was really happening, this is deplorable. This is criminal. This is crazy. And nobody cared enough, maybe because of baseball, maybe because it was not their team, maybe because it wasn't the Cowboys or the Yankees or the Lakers, but it was so disgustingly overlooked by those with the loudest voices that empowers me even more to keep talking about it. And when the A's finally turned on their comments last week, I had to have a chuckle. Not only did I get my timeline filled up with, did you see this, DA? Did you see this? I was like, absolutely, I saw this. And we're going to do something towards this. And so I did a little video about I played the part of an A's PR person explaining all of these comments with the happy-go-lucky, nothing to see here attitude, which I feel like the A's go through. So if your audience wants to check that out, that's last week's video here on this channel.
Well, I really mean it. Damon is the guy that you want to subscribe to. If you are meeting him for the first time here today, number one, where have you been? But number two, this guy cares, and he really isn't just some East Coast radio guy at all. This guy loves sports. He cares about fans. And again, he points at bullshit when he sees it. And that is a refreshing thing. And like you said about Shador, trying to be definitive about something until you actually see it is ridiculous. Now we have seen a season of baseball in Sacramento, and it could not have gone worse. I mean, it just, you know, bang up job, John. You know, the only people who didn't like it were the players, the fans, and the media. Otherwise, you crushed it. I mean, it was disgusting. And unfortunately for Nick Kurtz, who rightfully so wins American League Rookie of the Year, nobody saw that either.
You know, for those that blame Oakland, and you and I had both public conversations and private conversations about what happened with the ballpark and the possibilities. And I'm not going to sit here and say the city of Oakland had no responsibility, that they have no mud on their hands. But if you were to look at 1 year Sacramento and the 25 years or whatever that John Fisher owned the A's in Oakland, what was the difference? He moved the team, and it was the same series of mistakes, stepping on rakes, pies in the face. It was tone-deaf PR. It was, pushing away those that might have been most loyal. It was lack of investment, unless in the very transparent way we had to get our revenue-sharing CBA money, so we're going to have to spend on Luis Severino or whatever. Like, everything that was a problem in Oakland was a problem in Sacramento. So don't tell me it was an Oakland issue. Don't tell me it was a market issue. It's the owner. It's the owner, stupid.
Don't tell me it won't be a Las Vegas issue.
Exactly right. Yes, exactly. It's like that zebra doesn't change his stripes. As long as that guy owns the team, you can go ahead and get that ballpark built in Las Vegas. But I mean, the same series of problems and baggage carries with him that does not evaporate suddenly when he gets a new ballpark. So they might push this thing through in Las Vegas, and they might be there in a couple of years. But it doesn't change that he's one of the single worst owners we've ever seen in any of the major North American professional sports. It does not change that. He will never change. And baseball is absurd for pushing this plan along for him. Force him to sell, put an expansion team in Las Vegas, and get him out of the way. Because he is nothing but a problem all the time.
It was such a good time with you at line 51. Yet my most vivid memory of your visit remains that angry, the furious punk metal band that was in the parking lot just screaming at each other. It was like Guar took their costumes off, and it was a whole bunch of girls. Whoever knew?
I tell you, I mean, I came out to Oakland. It was my only time ever going to an A's game. I'd been to the Bay Area before, but I'd never gone to an A's game. And so, you know, I'm kind of wondering what this last season in Oakland's going to look like. And
I warned you, I'm like, this is going to get a little weird.
What was your quote? We're, 15 minutes away from fighting for gas or something?
Yeah, like Mad Max.
And I always think about that, and I crack up, and I have this footage of this concert, and it's like, you know, when you're out here in New York, it's like, oh, there's a concert playing at Citi Field before the Mets game. Oh, there's a concert playing at Yankee Stadium. Oh, who's playing, you know? And then I'm like, oh, what's the concert before the A's game? Like you said, Guar in high school, and they are doing death metal in the parking lot, and they're writhing on the ground as 35 people slam into one another. I'm like, that's the perfect pregame concert for this A's season, for this franchise, and before the end of the world. This is all too perfect. I'm like, this is it. This is the epitome of the experience of going to
You feel like a producer. You're like, perfect, no notes.
That's right. 10 out of 10, no notes.
The note that I have for everyone is make sure that you are subscribing to DA's page. go and give him the love on YouTube. If you are on DA's page, and maybe I'm new to you, what an honor it is to be hosting a show on DA's page. Hey, maybe drop a sub and a like over on my page too. I'd really, really appreciate that. Because I am sort of running the show from my side here today, I've got a little bit of a tradition that we wrap up each and every show with. I don't know. So if you weren't a sports talk radio guy, what do you think you would have been in this world? I would have probably been like a history teacher or something like that. I love history. So we're going to do it today in history. But if you were not blessed with the pipes, if you were smart enough to have gone into another industry,
well, you have gone into? Those are two different questions, because I would have never had the foresight to definitely not do this job if I wanted to have stability and cash flow and comfort, right? Because I scrape through many markets and, you know, luggage tags and zip codes and, you know, managements and stations and holidays, et cetera. But I love this. I would have written somehow. I always have really loved writing. I probably would have tried to write about sports, which probably is even better, because I think that that's dead now. I don't think you're allowed to do that as an industry anymore, or as a career. But I've always really liked writing, and I don't know if it would have been books or novels or magazines or reporting or news or what have you. But, you know, I grew up really dedicated to Sports Illustrated. You're probably like me. Like, I had a subscription when I was 9 years old, and I never gave it up until like 2 years ago. And I read every issue cover to cover, and I idolized the guys that wrote there, like Gary Smith and Rick Riley and all those guys. So that really,
it's the only magazine that I ever read the last page first. I would go right to the Rick Riley. I'd read that column on the last page. Yeah. Then I'd go through the cover stories and everything else.
You ever think about what Rick Riley's doing? That guy was one of the most powerful voices in sports for like 30 years. And I have no idea what's going on with
him. I think he made like a fortune writing like children's books or something.
Oh, really?
Wow. He wrote a kid's book and it did well. He turned it into a series. And I think he just said, you know what? Look at the way the world is going. I don't think I want to walk in that direction with sports fans anymore. And I think he just kind of tapped out and, I mean, he's got to be like 25 years older than us too, right?
Yeah. He has got to be in his 70s at this point or something like that. Yeah. But I mean, boy, he left for ESPN, and then he had that ESPN show. I forget what it was called, like Hometowns or something. And then it's like, once that contract was up, you'll never see
me. He's gone. Yeah, totally. We always begin today in history with whose birthday is it? We have three octogenarians to truly celebrate today.
Ooh.
Happy birthday, Marty Scorsese, 83 years old. Guys, genius.
What's your favorite Scorsese movie?
It feels like if you don't say Goodfellas, you're getting that wrong. But I will say Raging Bull is still an absolute freaking monster. Did you see Scorsese's turn in Seth Rogen's The Studio?
No, I haven't seen The Studio. I've read a lot about it.
It's good. Scorsese does a cameo in that and is very good. What are you going with?
I'd go Goodfellas, but Gangs of New York is a close second. I have very little to nitpick with Gangs of New York. I don't think there's a flaw in Goodfellas, so I'm going to just say that's his most perfect movie. But Gangs of New York is such an adventure and project to tackle. It's like this kind of massive thing to tackle with the period piece. I just didn't like the Cameron Diaz casting. I thought that was, it could have been far better.
The accent.
Yeah, it was all over the place, but that's an incredible, incredible film.
Happy 81st birthday, Lorne Michaels. I mean, Saturday Night Live. Find me a more impactful producer over the last 40, 50 years of entertainment than what Lorne Michaels did on Saturday Night Live and still does. I mean, what, he just made a lot of big, bold cast decisions. And that show just keeps chugging, man. It really does.
It's outrageous that he's been at the helm for most of the 50 years, 45 of the 50 years or whatever, and it's still relevant and pumping out stars. I mean, his casting chops are outrageous. Like, as long as if he picks you, you got a pretty good shot of becoming like a star in comedy in a big picture, not just on sketch comedy TV.
Even if they pass, ask Shane Gillis.
True.
Look, I'm always going to have a special place in my heart for Saturday Night Live. I always will. Happy 65th birthday to RuPaul.
Okay. Wow. RuPaul 65.
Still looking good, girl. I forgot another octogenarian and maybe the most beloved out there. Who would have ever thought that at 81 years old, he'd be maybe at his peak of fame? Danny DeVito. Happy 81st birthday, Danny DeVito, with his Jersey Mike's commercials and his Turn On Always Sunny. People love Danny DeVito now more than ever before.
I felt like Danny DeVito was old and Taxi, and he's still kicking, doing Jersey Mike's commercials and amazing in Always Sunny. Just amazing in Always Sunny. So that's a great one.
Rachel McAdams is 47. And Zoe Bell is 47. Zoe Bell became a project and an ingenue of Quentin Tarantino. She's the girl with the Australian accent who was Uma Thurman's stunt double and stand-in. And she must have had really nice looking feet too, because Tarantino made her a star and put her in her own movies. So happy birthday to her.
Very nice. Now, these are good pulls. I like this. This at the end of the show ties it all together. This is very good.
You want to talk about, you know, a group that we're still talking about to today. Ladies, you might have done something right. Today in 1558, we're going way back.
Okay.
It was the death of Mary I, and Elizabeth Tudor came to the English throne. The Virgin Queen took over for her sister. And look, they're still talking about them Tudor girls in 2025. They're the original Kardashians.
You know, this is why I love Damon Bruce. Only he could tie together the Tudors of the 1500s and the Kardashians. That gives you the context historically that you need. You would have been a really good history teacher.
Thank you. Just here to help. That's all I'm doing. Today in 1894, H.H. Holmes, Dr. Henry Howard Holmes, one of our first modern serial killers here in the United States, was arrested in Boston. He is claimed to have killed between 23 and 200 people. In other words, they don't know.
Yeah, right.
That's a big swing. 23 or 200, there'd be more dignity by saying, we have no idea what he did.
Back in the day where there's like, your law enforcement's like, I don't know. Did you see him? Nope. Did you see him? Nope. Then I got nothing. It's out the window.
Today in 1968, NBC, NFL, The Heidi Game.
Yes, today, I saw this on Instagram.
Yeah, it's the Raiders and Jets were playing. The game happened to run past the start time of what was supposed to be Heidi.
Right.
And the network broke away from the live sporting event to go to the Heidi game. And since that moment, no network has ever broken away from a live sporting event to go to regularly scheduled programming. That's how big of a deal that was in broadcast history.
Yeah, and the Jets had a big lead, and then the Raiders came storming back in the final 2 minutes of that game to win the game. And in those days, of course, there is no internet. And so people woke up the next day assuming the Jets had won and looked at the newspaper and said, wait a second, the Raiders won that football game? And that was right in the mix of when the Jets were competing for the AFL championship, but then the Super Bowl, right?
It was their one eyelash of moment in time. let's see. Today in 1970, a patent issued to Doug Engelbert for the computer mouse XY position indicator display system. It would become known as the mouse.
Wow. Imagine inventing the mouse. I mean, talk about Rick Riley just retiring and being like, I'm good now. If you invent the mouse, nobody knows your name, and yet you live in a giant mansion with multiple yachts, and people go, how'd you make your money? You're like, the mouse.
Did you invent the better mouse trap? Like never before. Yeah. Waiting to see what I did. Let's see. Today in 1978, you want to talk about special moments in television history? The Star Wars Holiday Special.
Wow. Love that. I love that because I just ended up watching a YouTube documentary on this, I believe. Yeah, I think. Oh, maybe it wasn't on YouTube. Kevin Smith did something. I guess I watched it on Netflix or something like that. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
By the way, if you want to see another ridiculous holiday special, Pee Wee Herman did a Pee Wee's Playhouse holiday special.
Yeah, it's great.
As subversive and like decidedly gay thing that it was ever served up to kids on a Saturday morning. And it's still very entertaining and brilliant the whole way through. I mean, he's got Zsa Zsa Gabor in it. I mean, what more do you want?
It's really epic. Also, a couple of years ago, I put Pee-wee and Magic Johnson on their magic sleigh on my Christmas sweater because it's so ridiculous. Magic Johnson comes into the they play with I forget which of the characters is like the magic screen, but then they get sucked into the magic screen and go on this crazy. It's like you're on drugs. It's all psychedelic. That's why I love Pee-wee's Playhouse. It's like you have to kind of be high to really get it.
Did you hear that, kids? Now you want to talk about some serious boardroom high-fiving. I mean, everybody was getting rich this day. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, bros, all around this boardroom. In 2004, the Kmart Corporation announced it was buying Sears Roebuck for $11 billion. Is there a single Kmart or Sears even open and operating in the United States? This was 2004. Here we are, 21 years later, and that $11 billion has to be worth close to zero right now, right?
It's really tragic that our childhoods that existed at places like Kmart, and I don't know about you guys on the West Coast, but the Caldors and James Ways and Ames and all those places.
You know what came out? You know what? So I grew up a Caldors kid for sure on the East Coast. A lot of blue light specials with grandma at Kmart for sure. Mm-hmm. Out here, there was one in San Francisco. They got a Burlington Coat Factory out here.
Love that. Yeah, I love that. That's that last man standing, I guess, right? That's like the last original Pizza Hut.
Totally. Where's the last Blockbuster? It's somewhere in Oregon.
Yes, exactly. Last standing Burlington Coat Factory.
I don't know how we decide these things, but we always wrap up with whatever day it is. National Dog Day, Cat Day, whatever. I don't know how they decide these things. Today is National Baklava Day, and I think it's safe to say that baklava has zero detractors, zero enemies. Is there anyone who doesn't like baklava?
Baklava is amazing. It's a delicious treat, a delicious dessert. My only issue is you ever go to a store and be like, oh my God, that's how much it costs to buy a box of baklava? Like I went somewhere and it was like $16 for a box of baklava. I'm like, wait a second. What? You don't realize because you get it at for dessert at a restaurant, right. or you get it at somebody else's party or somebody brings it to your Christmas party. And you're like, great, baklava. Then you go and buy, you go, oh my God, this is expensive.
By the way, my man Otis just wants to say, hey, shout out Burlington Coat Factory and Daily Nice. Indeed. And Smiley Dan, by the way, Smiley Dan is one of our oldest, most OG plusers over here. Great guy. Like if you're ever going to roll into a Dead & Co. show or a Fish show, you want Smiley Dan with you. This is the guy right here. Thanks. And he's like DA doing the history segment like a boss. I'm telling you, it's that Damon magic. It really is.
End up coming out there for the Super Bowl, then I'd love to meet Smiley Dan or the rest of your gang. I'll have to go out to your bar for a Guinness or two. I got to see the time difference with 3 hours. I don't know if they're going to send me out there because it's a 3 a.m. start time then for us to get up and over to Radio Row where there might not be anybody on Radio Row at that point. But if I'm out there, we're hanging out.
Let me know. Okay. Let me know for sure. Damon, thank you very, very much. This was a fun one today. It's always a pleasure to do something with you. And honestly, we need to get like on a schedule. We should do a show together like once every other week or something. I know you're a busy guy. You got kids. Same thing over here. But we need to make this happen. It's too much fun whenever we get together, man.
Totally. Love it, man. Thanks so much for asking me. I really, really do loving it with you. Love doing
Thanks.
It with you.
Thanks so much to Damon for coming on by today. Thanks to everyone for being here again. Like and subscribe on both channels if you would, please. And as always, we ask you to remember that sports don't build character. They reveal it. And like that, they're gone.